Now you have a new objective in your lives, to become masters of air-to-air combat tactics.
Okay, baby, let's do it.
That pilot's good.
You have a problem with women in the Army, Preston?
Not with all of them, sir.
Aren't you forgetting something?
You keep them.
Come on, show me what you got.
Gee, is this a quiz, sir?
Your whole life's a quiz, young man.
I'll wash you out if you can't cut it.
You clear on that?
I got it!
It's like sex.
I need you to help me out.
Hardly anybody gets it perfect the first time.
We're pushing these guys a little too hard, sir.
He wants me out of here.
I think it could be one of the best. Time to rock and roll.
Just so you know, I will be kicking your rear today.
Good.
People, there's a hostile situation. We are on red alert. This is not a drill.
You think it's fine for me to be a pilot as long as there's nothing at stake?
People are going to die down there.
We will confront the forces of evil and kill them deader than hell.
Put them in the air!
Shut down! I'm on my own!
Get the hell out of there, Army!
Quickly, do you have contact?
We are going in. Mayday, mayday.
Shoot him! Blast him!
Can you move?
Now the flap!
Go pop three latches on that missile, bring it over here.
Throw this on our head.
Wax him now. Put it on your shoulder, quick.
Jacob! Cook him!
I got him in my sight.
He's getting position. He's going guns.
And I'm hearing a noise.
Wavy noise or solid noise?
He's got a missile.
Solid.
Lock him up. Kill him now.
Shoot him in the air.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
All right, now stop me if you've heard this one before, Mike.
Okay.
A young hotshot pilot both annoys and impresses his superior officer with his reckless but clearly brilliant flying skills. His best friend and partner is killed in combat, but the pilot is cleared of responsibility, though he feels guilt for his death. He has to train to get himself psyched back up in order to take down the evil man the government is after. Along the way, he romances a woman in his program who goes by a name that is traditionally male.
Oh, I didn't realize we're doing Top Gun.
Yeah, Mike, enough about Top Gun. We're not talking about Top Gun. Let's talk about Firebirds, Mike.
Oh, okay, I did watch the right shitty movie then. Okay, cool.
Wait, are you saying Top Gun is a shitty movie? Is that what you're throwing down?
I didn't mean to. But that is what I accidentally said, so no.
All right.
I watched the right movie. It was shitty. There we go.
There you go. Yeah, Firebirds is a ripoff of Top Gun that Nicolas Cage starred in 1990. It's actually sort of an important movie in Nicolas Cage's filmography, I would say, because this is the first time we got to see Cage in action hero mode.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right.
This is
the beginning.
Yeah, you know, movies like The Rock and Con Air and Face Off, they would come to define Cage's career in the back half of the 90s. And I think the seeds for those roles are planted here. Like, the voice he's using and, the kind of, attitude he has as a character is similar to, his kind of persona in those films as well.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even put that together. And I don't know if that's because those movies are defined Cage for me, the back half of the 90s. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is Nicolas Cage in Firebirds. But this is 1990 this came out.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. This is kind of the proto-swagger action star Nicolas Cage that we get later.
The beginnings of action Nicolas Cage. That does not change the fact that Firebirds, released internationally as Wings of the Apache, is a shameless ripoff of Top Gun.
Yes,
replacing fighter jets with helicopters. The result is a bare-bones movie that kind of barely holds together. I would say at only 85 minutes, it's like a book report about Top Gun where the kid's only research was reading summaries of the movie on SparkNotes.
Wow. Yes. That is the most apt description of this film.
Now Firebird stars Cage as Jake Preston. The user submitted IMDb plot synopsis because it doesn't have an actual one. The U.S. government is willing to help any country that requires help in ridding themselves of drugs with support from the Army. Unfortunately, the drug cartels have encountered that offer by hiring one of the best air combat mercenaries and have armed him with a Scorpion attack helicopter. The Army decides to send in its best people from its Apache air combat school, but first they have to be taught how to fly air-to-air combat missions.
Yes. That was way too in-depth for IMDb.
That absolutely. And like I said, the actual IMDb plot synopsis thing didn't even have one. It was just a user-submitted one.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So not even any mention of Cage in the user-submitted thing. Who is the main character?
How dare they?
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of sums it up for us. We don't have to do the review anymore, I guess.
Are we done? Is that going to be it?
That's the whole movie.
Yeah, well, we'll keep going anyway. The film... Firebirds was shot primarily on location in Arizona and Texas, and the aerial stunt sequences were coordinated with the National Guard, the Army, and the Air Force. Between tech advisors, stuntmen, and pilots, over 100 personnel were directly involved in the production aspects of Firebirds.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty wild. And another Top Gun connection, the training sequences in the film were designed by Richard T. Stevens, who also worked on the visuals for Top Gun.
There you go. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
And scenes from the movie also feature as static shots in a computer game called Gunship 2000. Aren't you glad I researched these movies?
Yes, Mike. You're the best researcher. Amazing.
Oh, man. Wikipedia is great. Yeah. Now, Firebirds received mostly negative reviews, and it was a box office disappointment. On a budget of $22 million, the movie made back 14, opening in fifth place. It actually opened on the same day as Back to the Future Part 3.
Wow.
And that movie opened at number one, so it kind of buried Firebirds. And then Total Recall came out just a week later. So Firebirds basically was completely forgotten, even in its own time. Like,
so this film almost touched history.
Almost. It was there when Back to the Future 3 and Total Recall came out.
Yeah. Like, and then just quickly faded to the background.
Yeah, I would imagine most of the grossings of this movie came from people who were trying to go see sold-out shows to Back to the Future 3 or Total Recall.
Oh, man. That's so probably accurate.
Firebirds currently holds a 10% of Rotten Tomatoes, with many critics ripping it to shreds, although a lot of them are quick to mention Cage, like Vincent Canby, who wrote, "Cage plays the sort of B-picture role that might once have suited William Gargan. Unlike Mr. Gargan, though, Mr. Cage insists on acting. Mr. Cage simply won't quit. He never listens to or sees anybody else in a scene, being too busy monitoring his own utterly mysterious attention-getting responses."
Yeah, that's a good point.
That is I feel like that's a really apt description of Cage's like entire career, I think. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think in a way that like I love Cage, that's why we're doing this podcast, and it's, you know, but in a way it could like overshadow other performances and like kind of like, you know, seem kind of like focused on his own without being present in the scene.
Right. I mean, that's kind of everything we've talked about. A lot of his choices for how to read a line and right. Like a lot of his stuff doesn't really make sense in any of the context.
Yeah, a lot of it is weird. It's odd. Now, in addition to Cage, Firebirds also stars Tommy Lee Jones, Sean Young, Brian Kestner, Burt Ryan, Dale Dye, Mary Ellen Trainer, who died recently, last year actually, but she was well known as the mom from The Goonies and also the therapist in the Lethal Weapon movies.
Right.
And J.A. Preston and more. The film was written by Nick Thiel and Paul F. Edwards. Thiel is currently a writer and producer on the CBS Sherlock Holmes series Elementary, while Edwards was a writer on TV shows like Gunsmoke, V, and Baywatch Nights, which... Are you familiar?
Forget that, Jim.
Are you familiar with Baywatch Nights, Mike?
I feel like I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
Baywatch Nights is the spinoff of Baywatch, where David Hasselhoff's character became private detective.
Wow.
Not only that, in the second season, he's a private detective for aliens.
Bold choice.
I've never actually watched Baywatch Nights, but I've been obsessed with the idea of it for a very long time.
That sounds wonderful.
Because, like, the first season happened, and he was, like, a private detective. And, like, where do you get that? Like, how does that come about? Because, you know, it was your lifeguard for, like, 10 years. But then there was the spinoff. He's a private detective, whatever. And then in the second season, you know, they were trying to rework the show, and X-Files had just become a big hit. So they reworked it with aliens.
Oh, my God.
And then it was canceled. But even so.
Travesty. We were robbed, Mike.
We were. Firebirds was directed by David Green, who, before Firebirds, was most well known for directing a movie called Buster, which starred Phil Collins, who is prominently featured in Firebirds. I can see, like, that dawning realization on your face.
It all makes sense now of why the random Phil Collins songs are in this movie.
Yeah. Now, Today, David Green is most well known as the former chairman and founder of September Films, which is a production company whose flagship TV show is the reality series Bridezillas, of which he is a producer.
So I'm glad his career worked out.
Yeah, well, he seems like he's doing pretty well for himself.
He's probably doing okay.
Yeah, I imagine he's got, like, money.
Yeah. But I'm totally picturing him as just, like, a sleazy, like, jacket sleeves rolled up TV producer kind of guy. Even though it's not the 80s, but that's what I'm picturing him as.
Right, well, he's, like, permanently stuck in 80s mode.
Yes.
Like that one character in Futurama. Like,
right.
The 80s executive who, like, unfreezes and has boneitis, right?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
All right, well, so, Mike, overall, what were your thoughts on Firebirds?
It happened. It wasn't... I'm glad it was only 85 minutes, which was nice.
Yeah.
It feels very rushed through, and that's why I think you're... it feels like the... book report version of kids who only read the spark notes of Top Gun.
Yeah,
because it feels like a lot of, all right, we check that scene off, we check that scene off, okay, now helicopters are going to do some flips and we check that scene off.
Yep.
And it feels like a lot of that is going on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, 85 minutes, it just feels like a very thin movie. And there's not that much going on. Like,
no.
And I would say, like, even like the helicopter sequences, which should be the draw of the movie, are very, like, uninteresting.
Like, yes.
Like, I was not thrilled by any of the helicopter sequences. Not in the way that I was thrilled by, like, the jet fighting sequences of Top Gun. Which,
right.
Top Gun is, like, a deeply dumb movie. but it's a really fun movie, though. It's, like, a really, like, solid movie, I think.
Yeah.
And the action in that movie is spectacular. Like, Tony Scott really, like, does a great job with that movie.
I think, too, this movie almost feels like a commercial for Apache helicopters.
It absolutely is.
Like,
because Apache, I think Apache helicopters had just come out.
They must have. I don't know.
This movie was being made.
Yeah, that's what this movie feels like. Because a lot of it is, guys, this movie is about helicopters, is what this whole movie screams. Like, they'll walking down a hallway, and, like, there's pictures of helicopters on the wall. Like, why?
Because they fly helicopters, Mike.
Yeah, that's apparently. That's
all it. All they think of.
And like you said, even the action sequences, quote-unquote action sequences, feel just kind of like we're going to film this, you know, training run of the Air Force or whatever, and then we'll just put in scenes of Nicolas Cage, like, bobbing in a cockpit. Like, they didn't feel very exciting or engaging at all.
No, they didn't. And, you know, so this movie does star people other than Cage. It stars mainly Tommy Lee Jones and Sean Young as the two other main characters. And Tommy Lee Jones, I texted you as I was watching the movie because his performance really reminded me of his character in Small Soldiers.
Yep.
And maybe it's just because it's Tommy Lee Jones' voice. I don't know, but, like, he's also playing an army sergeant, and it just he's doing kind of the similar cadence of tone. So that was pretty funny for me for a little while.
Yeah, no, that's true. It made me think that it seems like the military is, so in movies at least, it's always portrayed that the military's greatest weapon is quickly spoken rhyming orders. That's all time. Anytime Tommy Lee Jones tells Nicolas Cage to do anything, it's a quickly spoken list that rhymes. And I don't know why. It's very odd. And he does that in a lot of his roles, too. And I feel like Tommy Lee Jones can take on anything, whether it's drug cartels, toy aliens, or volcanoes. He can do it.
Yep.
Those it feels like the same character. I like to imagine that's what Tommy Lee Jones is like all the time in real life.
I feel like he basically is. Definitely.
That said, he delivers a pretty good performance compared to the rest of the film.
Yeah, I think he's actually, like, doing the best here, which is actually surprising, because Tommy Lee Jones has a reputation for phoning it in a lot of times when he's not into what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, like, Men in Black 3, or Men in Black 2, even. You know, he's clearly not that into the movie anymore. Like, he doesn't want to do a Men in Black movie, but he's just kind of, like, stuck there.
Yeah.
And you can see on the screen how bored he is. Like, he's really bored.
That's why I think this is Tommy Lee Jones in real life. Just what he normally is like.
Right. Yeah, what did you think of Sean Young's character? Because I had a lot of questions about her relationship with Cage.
Yeah, very confusing, because the first 25 minutes to a half hour or so,
yeah,
it's all GTFO, we used to date, I hate you now.
Well, not even that. The first few times they meet, you see them together, they're just kind of flirting with each other. And then, after a half hour of the movie has passed, she just drops, they start hinting at the fact that they used to have a history or something.
Yeah.
But, that was never in play for the first 20, 30 minutes.
It's very odd. I don't know. And she is so monotone with almost all of her dialogue also.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether it was mad or confused. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, this was right after peak Sean Young, because she was in a lot of movies in the 80s. She was in, Blade Runner and Wall Street, Dune.
And
a couple of things. And, she was in this. I feel like her last like, really big role I can think of is in Ace Ventura, where she plays the villain of that movie.
Right.
But she hasn't acted in a lot of big stuff in a long time. She actually had a very small role in Bone Tomahawk.
Really?
Yeah.
So interesting. How about that?
That's something. But yeah.
So but I felt very mixed messages and confused because, like you said, they're flirty, and then she's like, "Get out of my face! I hate you!" And then the next thing I knew, they were running away from the base to go have sex. Like, what? I don't. And it was totally cool that Nicolas Cage stole her panties in the laundromat. I don't get what that was about.
That was weird.
A lot of really weird stuff happening with their relationship and that character that I did not approve of or enjoy in any weird way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to talk about the sex scene because it felt like a parody of Top Gun. It felt like Hot Shots.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because it just kind of comes out of nowhere. They start having sex, and it's playing a Phil Collins song over it.
Yep.
And that's we were talking about how the director of this movie directed a movie starring Phil Collins. That's the connection there that we were talking about before. Phil Collins has a song over the sex scene and also a song that plays over the credits. Two different songs by Phil Collins in this movie. So I think your enjoyment of this movie might depend on how much you enjoy Phil Collins.
Yeah, it highlights the two best scenes in the film.
What, with the sex scene and when it ends?
And when it ends. That's yeah, it's very odd. And the scene when they're doing their training run, where I don't even remember her character, anyone's character's name. But Sean Young's doing she's like the scout helicopter that's supposed to,
Yeah.
And the whole time, Nicolas Cage is just like, "Hey, we had sex once." The whole scene, he's just throwing really gross innuendos out.
Yep.
And it's really uncomfortable. I don't know. It may be really uncomfortable, at least.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an uncomfortable relationship. It's not well portrayed in any sense. And I feel the movie, it's weird because the movie kind of sets her up as, a stronger female character.
Exactly. It tries to make that argument a couple times.
Yeah, but it completely, whiffs it.
And then it does stuff like that.
Yeah. And plus, it is a ripoff of Top Gun, so it's basically the same relationship that Tom Cruise has with Kelly McGillis in that movie. Down to the fact that this character... The female character in Top Gun is named Charlie, and this one is named Billy.
Right.
Which are both traditionally male names.
Yeah, name, yeah. Cross it off the checklist that the spark notes listed.
Yep. And then there's just weird stuff that happens, throughout this movie. There's definitely some Cage-isms. Some Cage lines, which are fun. I'm a big fan of his training sequence, where he's in the virtual reality thing, and he just keeps shouting, "I am the greatest," over and over again.
You now have air-to-air threat in your sector.
I am the greatest. I am the greatest. I am the greatest. I am the greatest. I am the greatest.
Yep, that was one of my notes I made. We have a a beautiful depiction of N64 era video game graphics.
Yep.
And I wonder if that was, super high-tech. It's 1990, so I guess so.
I think it was. That's the sequence I was talking about when the guy who worked in Top Gun, the visual effects of that movie, he did those are the visuals he worked on for this movie.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like at the time, those were probably pretty pretty impressive. I don't know, but...
yes, but it's very odd, and he's just yelling, "I am the greatest," and stuff is blown up in boxy helicopters or... so few polygons you can count them, and they're just blowing up.
Yeah.
It goes on for a while, too.
It does. It's a long scene. Yeah. And Cage also has a very funny line towards the end where he's talking to this guy named Calvin. And Calvin says something about his mother, and Cage is like, I'm your mother now, Calvin.
Yeah, he says, only my mother calls me Calvin, and right. then he yells that
I'm
at him.
I'm your mother now, Calvin. Which was very odd and very cagey, and I enjoyed that. But there's other stuff that just, like, played weird for me, like Tommy Lee Jones' birthday party.
That's the scene where they're walking down the hallway, and for some reason there's a giant helicopter picture on the hallway.
Right. That. But, like, they enter, and I don't know if you thought this, too. I might be a terrible person for thinking this. But when Tommy Lee Jones and his wife walk into the place, you see a birthday cake that's shaped like a helicopter. And the candles are on top of the helicopter blades, and it makes it look like a burning swastika.
Oh my god. I didn't put that together.
But like, you did, right?
You're totally right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, just, wow. Just for a second, but it was weird. Like, so there was that. Also in that scene, actually, Cage and Sean Young have a scene where Cage hits on her. And again, at this point in the movie, it was not clear to me that they had dated before.
Yes.
So they were just kind of like, I thought they were just kind of like, Cage like saw a pretty girl and he was like flirting with her or whatever, because she's the only girl in the army.
Right.
There's like the scene where they like flirt with her at the party, and then she leaves and she looks back at him. Right. Mm-hmm. And he smiles, and then they cut something else. And then it cuts back to her again, and it's the exact same shot of her turning and looking back at him. Like, they reused the same shot twice in, like, 20 seconds.
Yep. They pulled a holy grail. It's just the same shot of Lancelot running at the castle.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember there's one line of dialogue that gives you the hint that they know each other when they first meet in the film.
Okay.
And he, like, let go of her hand or something. And somebody says, oh, what's the matter? You got a problem with women in the military? And he says, no, just that one. Which, like, is really weird and doesn't make sense. But then when you think about the fact that they apparently, 45 minutes later, find out...
that they had dated previously. But, yeah, again, it's not established well at all.
Right, yeah. Which makes the apparent courting that Nicolas Cage is doing super, like, predatory. Like, like, he won't let up, and she's kind of like, won't say no, but is not interested at all, clearly.
Yeah, it's weird. And I think I found out they had caught on that they were going out around the laundromat scene, or the scene where she's doing laundry.
Right.
Because that's at the point where I wrote in my notes in big capital letters, wait, when did they go out? What's going on?
Yeah.
Also in that scene, they have, like, sort of an argument, but, like, they're kind of, like, you know, still kind of bantering. And then, she's like, yeah, I'm not going out with you. And he's like, no, but you should. And she's like, no. But he's like, yes. And she's like, no. And then at some point, like, to end the argument, Cage just says, like, an eyebrow wiggle.
Yes.
Eyebrows go up and down.
That's Cage's performance in this film.
What?
That seems like a lot of his performance is just like, yeah, do this weird thing at the end.
Like a little random tics throughout.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is a lot of Cage. It's a lot of Cage performances, but I feel like it's more noticeable in this film because for the most part, he's not really doing that much. He's kind of like fairly flat, I would say, except for like those weird tics that just kind of come out of nowhere. I'm also a big fan of after the training sequence that Cage bombs. Mm-hmm. No pun intended. Helicopter. after the training sequence that he fails. You know, it has to be a thing where, like, he has to train under Tommy Lee Jones, and and it cuts to Tommy Lee Jones in a supermarket with his kids, and Cage just finds him there.
Yeah.
And he's like, and as if he knows he's already there. Like, he just, like, shows up in, like, the aviator sunglasses.
He knew exactly what aisle he's in.
And he, like, just walks up to him and is like, so, you're gonna train me now, right?
Yeah.
Or something along those lines, and it's like, wait, how did you know where he was gonna, like, how did you know that he was out grocery shopping with his kids?
Right.
Why wouldn't you wait until you're at work or something? Like, the next day. Like, very odd.
Yeah, it's very weird. And then my favorite, I had two really my favorite cageisms or odd physical tics that he does to end the scene.
Right.
One, Tommy Lee Jones and his character, they box at one point, which we don't really get to see. And the next morning we see Tommy Lee Jones is all achy and it's like he's all beat up and he's old. And then we show you see him going up the staircase really slowly, very gingerly. And Nicolas Cage comes like high kneeing up the staircase. And he stops next at the top, checks his watch, and is like, "Everything cool, Sarge," or whatever he says in some weird Nicolas Cage voice. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm great." And Nicolas Cage just high knees, like, the whole time, just runs off out of frame. It doesn't make any sense. And then the next one is at the very end, right before they move off to South America to fight the drug cartels, because that's the whole movie, apparently. I feel like this movie was paid for by, like, Dare, or, like, one.
Yeah, well, it opens with a quote from George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
And I don't have the quote on me, but, like, it's an anti-drug... Like, he was very, like, the war on drugs kind of thing. That was his kind of thing.
Right, yeah. Him and Reagan's. But, so then at the end, and we find out Sean Young character is going into the combat zone, and Nicolas Cage is all like, "Oh, I'm sexist, but I care for you. Like, you can't go because you're a girl, but it's because I care for you."
Right, yeah, I have written down in all caps, "I just don't want you to get hurt!"
I didn't write down the line that he screams at the top of his lungs. And so he does that, and Sean Young's character starts to walk away. And then in the background, Nicolas Cage just does a high kick, like in anger, and then walks away. But it's supposed to be like he's kicking dirt or kicking a rock or something. But he just does like a really high kick,
like a kick like over his head kind of thing. Like,
then just walks away. Yeah. Those are my two favorite weird Cage things in this film.
Yeah, I did want to also talk about Cage's partner who dies at the beginning of the movie. His name is Dobbs, right?
Right.
So, like, at the beginning of the movie, Cage is engaged in, like, a firefight. Dobbs is there with him, and, like, I think they're fighting the evil man, right? They're fighting the bad guy?
Yeah, fighting Nemesis.
Eric Stoller, I think, is his name. Something along those lines.
Sure.
Doesn't matter. Evil man. He has no lines.
Nope, he has a beard though, so we know he's evil.
Yep, he has zero lines, but he has a beard. Anyway, so they're engaged in a firefight with this guy, and then it's like the opening minutes of the movie, and Nick Cage's friend Dobbs dies in the fight, and then the rest of the movie happens. No mention of Dobbs whatsoever,
nope.
Right? Like zero. And then at the very end of the movie, Cage kills the evil man, and then he says, "That was for Dobbs."
That's who he was talking about?
Yeah. And I only remembered that because at the beginning of the movie, Dobbs died. And I wrote down, "R.I.P. Dobbs, sad face." like, "We hardly knew ye."
Yeah. Wow, I didn't even put that together. Yeah, I thought that was talking about Tommy Lee Jones' helicopter that he shot down.
Nope, Dobbs. Dobbs is the guy at the beginning of the movie. And then at the end of the movie, Cage kills the guy and is like, "That was for Dobbs." Even though he hasn't, like, mentioned Dobbs at all in the past hour and 20 minutes of the movie's runtime. It would be like if, like, Return of the Jedi ended and Lando destroyed the Death Star, the second Death Star, and said, "That was for Porkins," or something like.
Wow, that's a deep cut, Mike. Good job. But that's a pretty apt comparison. Yeah, and we don't even get to see that opening firefight, like, in real time, right? It's Cage, like, recounting the story to a panel, and we see it in flashbacks in the very beginning when Dobbs dies, right? I think?
Yeah, no, Dobbs dies in the very beginning, and then it cuts to right afterwards, right, at the panel?
Oh, yeah, I don't remember, whatever. Yeah,
no, I don't think there was any flashbacks or anything. The movie's opening shot with the helicopters flying in, I thought was kind of interesting because it was very clearly taken from Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. That's why my note was slow-mo helicopter opening credit sequence in front of a rising sun. America. it's like that's the whole opening credits. It's nothing happens.
Yeah, it's just that shot.
Flying,
and then they reuse that shot later in the movie. when they're going, I think it's when they're going to the final firefight.
Yep. The air raid on the base at the very end was felt like something out of a movie that would be on Mystery Science Theater, where it's Nicolas Cage and Tommy Lee Jones having like a conversation, and all of a sudden out of nowhere everything
explosions
and like they're sprinting, but it's like cut, like, we get a couple frames of them sprinting, and then a couple frames of an explosion, and then a couple frames of them on the ground, and, like, you can't tell where anyone's going, other than that stuff is exploding.
Yeah, it definitely, like, this movie often felt like something Mystery Science Theater would make fun of.
The final firefight reminded me a lot of the Enforcer car chase at the very end of Space Mutiny, which, is, if everyone knows, is one of the best Mystery Science Theaters.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. It's crazy to me this movie was released in theaters. Like, it feels like a direct-to-video kind of thing.
It does.
If it weren't for the budget behind it and, like, the aerial firefights, like, I don't think it would have been released in theaters. Like, it was so, like, incompetently told, I think. Like, there's not much going on. There's nothing happening between those characters. There's digressions in this movie that are completely pointless and make no sense. Like, there's a part of the movie where, like, Sean Young's like, you have an eye dominance problem, Nicolas Cage. And then, I'm paraphrasing.
You're pretty close.
And then the movie spends, like, 10 minutes fixing Nicolas Cage's eye dominance problem.
Right.
Which, I guess, might be a real thing.
That's a thing, yeah.
Is it? Okay. But, like, even so, like, the way they fix it is ridiculous. Where he puts, like, pantyhose on his head and, like, puts a periscope on his eye and just drives around in a Jeep for, like, 2 minutes.
Right.
And then suddenly he's cured.
This whole thing that your body has spent your entire life doing, we could fix it in 10 minutes. It's fine. That a big deal.
Yeah, totally fine. Yeah, otherwise, I mean, is there anything else that struck you as odd or interesting about the fight? What?
All we're doing is going scene by scene and tearing apart this film.
Yeah, I mean,
but not really.
That takes us, that makes us, that brings us to the level of most of the critics that talk about this movie when it first came out. You know, it got very bad reviews. I think Gene Siskel's review, this movie had nothing to do with the drug wars at all. They could have been having a competition for the Olympics.
Yeah.
For all the movie, like, gives you. Owen Gleiberman said it was a third-rate knockoff of Top Gun and Blue Thunder. Said Cage gave a dull, one-note performance.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite lines in the film. So they kill Nemesis helicopter guy and blow up a couple fighter jets, because that's a thing, apparently. And then we hear, like, over the radio to one of them is, oh, as soon as you took out the air support, the cartels crumbled. And they're like, that was it. Like, we don't get to see this awesome joint task force raid on a drug cartel compound or anything like that. And we just find out that, oh yeah, it's over.
Yeah, it's just the one evil helicopter man.
That was it. He did everything.
Yeah, he was the entire operation, you know? It's a rough movie. Here's a pretty good one. Because Vincent Canby, again, who wrote the first review that I mentioned in the podcast, the movie plays as if it had been patched together between midnight and 3 a.m.
Oh, man.
One might go along with the suggestion that the Arizona desert and the Catamarca desert of South America look alike, but would they really have the exact same rocks? Which is true. Part of this movie takes place in South America, but it looks exactly the same as it did earlier in the movie in Arizona.
Right.
Which is where, like, this movie was shot in Arizona and Texas, so I guess they didn't have the budget to shoot in South America or anything.
That's great. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. There was so much going on with this film that I was just like, sure. Like,
whatever.
Can we get to the next thing, please?
Yeah. Well, how do you think this compares to the other Cage movies that we've watched so far?
It's pretty low on the totem pole. Well,
yeah, I would say so too. But I mean,
I'll give it the saving grace or whatever that, you, as you pointed out, it's the first foray into action films for Cage, so exactly. It's got that going.
And he's occasionally fun to watch, and like, you can see him kind of becoming the action star that he would be later on in his career. So there's definitely that. Overall, it's a pretty poor movie, and compared to the rest of, like, the previous 14 Cage movies that we've watched, this is pretty low on the total. I mean, I think it's better than Tempo de Uccidere, which we watched last week, or the last one that we watched.
That's something I already blocked out. I already don't think about that anymore.
Like, me mentioning it brings back PTSD, like, memories of Tempo de Uccidere.
Still want to database that you have to unmount. I don't know. I want to know. What was that line?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Cage had a pretty rough couple of romances in the last couple of movies that we've watched, too.
Yeah.
Where he always seems oddly predatory.
Yeah.
In this. Tempo de Uchidere, Vampire's Kiss.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess they just didn't know back then, Mike.
They just didn't.
It was a different time.
I guess so. All right. Is there anything else about Firebirds you want to talk about before we wrap up, Mike?
We watched it, so you didn't have to.
That is basically the gist of this podcast, yeah. Which is something that we said last week, too, and we'll probably say again in the future. All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you enjoy Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I stream our games on twitch.tv/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as on my podcast at filmbook.com, where I podcast about Agent Carter, Agent S.H.I.E.L.D., and Gotham, as well as our other podcast, Filmbookcast, as well. Thank you for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about and the title of your email, because so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be discussing Nicolas Cage's role in David Lynch's Wild at Heart. So that should be really cool. I'm pretty excited about that one.
Yeah.
Wild at Heart. And also, I was going to talk to you about this before the show, but I forgot. So we're going to mention it in the show now, so the listeners can hear, too.
Since we're already here.
Nicolas Cage and David Lynch also made something else in that same time period.
Okay.
Which is called Industrial Symphony Number 1.
No, are you serious?
And it's a 50-minute TV special that they made that came out, I think, right before Wild at Heart did or right after. In any case, I was thinking we could just talk about both.
Wow.
In this Wild at Heart review. What do you say?
I don't know. We'll have to review the contract, Mike. We'll have to see. And by that, I mean, if I can find it, yes.
Right. I think it's available to find. It might even be on YouTube, actually. But definitely, yeah, if we can find that one, that'll definitely be some cool
sure
thing. And you can check out... What?
I'll take any excuse for more David Lynch things.
Exactly, yeah. And I think it's going to be an interesting companion piece to Wild at Heart, because it actually also... It stars Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern, who are the stars of Wild at Heart. Okay. So it's, you know, something they both made around the same, like they all made together around the same time as they made Wild at Heart. Should be interesting. Should be cool. And you can check out this week's film bookcast where Mike and I will be reviewing 10 Cloverfield Lane. So I'm pretty psyched about that one, Mike. You?
Yeah. I'm excited for Dan Trachtenberg has finally become a man. If you're an old school, old time listener of the Totally Rad Show, you would get that joke. Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped for, potential horror movie starring John Goodman, and it's going to be cool.
Yeah, no, it's I'm very excited. 10 Cloverfield Lane, you know, and plus, you know, the continuation of the Cloverfield brand, which should be interesting as well. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. We are out.